Good morning, and may your new year be filled with many intriguing and interesting books, and hopefully that last book in the trilogy by Patrick Rothfuss. Welcome to the Book Club at 91.7, the first of the new year. I'm Mark Purcell. One correction before I get too far along. In the introduction, I said Downton Abbey's new season debuts tonight. That was wishful thinking. It debuts tomorrow evening on PBS. In just a moment, a conversation with the executive producer of Masterpiece about her new memoir. Later, it's the Findlay Market Cookbook with Bryn Muth and Julie Kramer. And we cut the cake for the birthday of J.R.R. Tolkien with Devin Brown and his book about how an obscure Oxford professor wrote The Hobbit and became the author of the century. So pour yourself a hot cup and settle by the radio as we crack the cover on 2015 here on the Book Club at 91.7. Thanks for listening to the Book Club at 91.7 on WVXU. I'm Mark Purcell. Good morning. On the phone with me is Rebecca Eaton. She is the Emmy Award-winning producer of PBS's Masterpiece and Mysteries series. And she has just written a book called Making Masterpiece, 25 Years Behind the Scenes at Sherlock, Downton Abbey, Prime Suspect, Cranford, Upstairs, Downstairs, and other great shows. It's a memoir filled with some great anecdotes, some of which I hope she'll share today. Rebecca Eaton, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
It's a pleasure, I think, so far.
Yeah. You, I was surprised to learn, started out in radio, public radio, not television.
I did. I actually started out in BBC Radio, World Service Radio in London, where I went after I graduated from college, and you'll like this. I went to England to work at the BBC mainly because I just wanted to go to England. I was a huge Anglophile, and I was an English major, and all I wanted to do was to go to London. So my college, Vassar College, had a program that sent two graduates a year to work at the BBC. So off I went, and I showed up for work, and my boss, who was a science producer, showed me around. And I was just kind of dazed and thrilled. And then I said, well, Peter, this is great. When can I see the show? And he said, Rebecca, it's a radio show. I hadn't read the fine print. I didn't even know it was radio, not television. Anyway, yes, I did start in radio. And then I came back just as NPR went on the air. And I was working in radio when All Things Considered had its first broadcast.
Working at WGBH in Boston, which is
Boston,
a great public broadcasting service there in both radio and television. Well,
yes.
Work at WGBH, you initially started doing on the radio side. How did you wander to the television side?
I was producing an arts program, and I was doing some scheduling for the radio program, and a friend of mine was leaving her job on a nightly community access show, which meant any group could come on and have a half an hour of airtime, and her job was to assist in producing that. And she came and said, you know, this is fun. Why don't you try it? I didn't particularly have aspirations to move into television. It was just something else to try. As it happened, the man who was the producer of that show, it was called Catch 44, turned out to be the general manager eventually he became the general manager of WGBH and the boss of Masterpiece Theater. So fast forward, I don't know, 17 years, I think, and Joan Wilson, who was the producer of Masterpiece Theater for years, died young and rather suddenly. And Henry Becton, who was that man who had been my boss when I was a production assistant, knew me, knew my work, and invited me to apply for the job. I'd been gone off and done other things in the in-between years. And so I think it was fortuitous that I had gone to work with him, even briefly, for a year or so before he was promoted up.
I had to grin at your account of being offered the job at Masterpiece. You had forgotten your coat, you're going somewhere with your husband. You went back into the office, got the call, and found out that you were pregnant with your first child, yeah, went out to tell your husband, went back in and got a call offering you that job. Quite a life-changing moment that was there, Rebecca.
It was. 15 minutes that changed our world. Absolutely. He just sitting in the car and I kept going in and trying to get my coat, but I would get these phone calls and everything changed in about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
5 o'clock that afternoon.
I laughed out loud when you went out and told him about the job offer, you know, after breaking the news of the pregnancy, and he begged you not to go back up to that office.
I still had left my coat, and I was about to get out of the car and go back again, and he would not let me out of the car. He said, please don't go back in there. I can't handle anything else.
So, and you thought it was going to be you thought it was going to be a relatively easy desk job, being an executive producer, but I guess you need to share with the audience what exactly an executive producer does.
Yeah, well, I didn't know, to tell you the truth. I knew what a producer does. A producer's the wrangler. It can be different in every single job and medium, but a wrangler to get other people to do things, often things they don't want, often to give you more money than they want to work harder, to do things differently. And I had to learn all that. I had been a producer. I had made documentaries. I had worked on this show. So I knew, I mean, all producing is the same. It's like, and you know, putting on a large party is producing. You know, having a family event is producing. It is thinking something ahead first and then getting everybody to pitch in and go in the same direction. So I had those skills kind of naturally, and I had honed them a little bit in various, you know, other media. So I took the job, but I had a huge amount to learn about the entire British broadcasting world. I mean, I knew the backgrounds, I knew the literature, I knew a lot of the shows, but how it really worked and how to do the business deals and how to read a script, how to give notes in a way that the writers, producers could hear them, you know, all the ins and outs. And it's taken me only about 30 years to learn.
Well, Masterpiece.
I'm beginning to get the hang of it.
Beginning to get it. Masterpiece has been on for, 42 years, and you've been there for some 28 years, and there have been lots of changes. What do you think has been the biggest change over the years at Masterpiece?
I would have answered this question differently if you'd asked me 20 years ago, 10 years ago, or last month. In the first iteration of Masterpiece, in its first decade or so, it was acquisitions of already made British shows. There was no competition. We were fully funded. Just screen shows and say, take that one, not that one, that one. Then we had to start co-producing shows, in other words, reading scripts and coming in earlier, so taking risks. That was its next iteration. And now I think the challenge is the way people can consume television, for lack of a better word. It's not only 9 o'clock Sunday night viewing. It is the way my daughter watches it, which is maybe 4 episodes of Downton Abbey one night in 3 months after it's aired, or watching it the next morning if you can't stay up that late on a Sunday night. And the competition for programming. We have had ups and downs in terms of funding. Mobile used to fully fund Masterpiece, Mobile Oil. Then they left. Then PBS had to fully support us. And now we are back with the support of Viking River Cruises and Ralph Lauren and the Masterpiece Trust. They are people who give money directly to the series. So I think the biggest challenge now is how to keep Masterpiece on PBS distinct, because British programs are showing up elsewhere, cable stations, Netflix, to keep our audience at 9 o'clock on Sunday night, the people who still want to watch it then, as well as educating a younger audience that this is actually really good stuff. It is something maybe your parents used to watch, but that doesn't mean you won't like it too, to sort of overcome that. Well, they've been here for so many years, it must be just for oldsters, which it completely isn't, as you'll know if you've seen Downton Abbey or Sherlock.
I'm speaking with Rebecca Eaton, who has just written her memoir, Making Masterpiece, 25 Years Behind the Scenes. It talks about, well, she mentioned Downton Abbey there and many other great shows. And when you first became that producer of Masterpiece Theater in 1985, and you say this right on the back of the book, you really hadn't seen many of the episodes. You had seen Upstairs, Downstairs, but not that much more.
Yes, I had dabbled in it. And when I first applied for the job, I thought, oh, I better catch up. And then I realized, oh, my God, there are hundreds of hours. I can't possibly catch up. So I did have a pretty good sense of what it was. I had read the books, but I was over my head for the first year or two. But then gradually I realized that my instincts were pretty true to what the traditional Masterpiece audience had liked and would like, that I didn't make any huge mistakes. And I had a lot of guidance from the man I was describing earlier, Henry Becton, the man who had been my original television boss and who was then the head of WGBH and actually quite a statesman in PBS, in broadcasting nationally. So I had a lot of help, and I was a pretty fast learner. So there are still a lot of Masterpiece theaters I've never seen. It's true. Don't tell anyone.
I won't.
Okay,
I won't. Well, no one at all.
Don't
no one at all.
It. Okay.
It's fascinating how many times in the book when you're relating anecdotes from actors, how many talk about Masterpiece really being their introduction into America, that many of these actors who've gone on to great big things are and got their start with an appearance on Masterpiece.
Yes. They didn't know they were having an appearance. I mean, when Anthony Hopkins took the acting job in War and Peace in the 70s, or when Ralph Fiennes was in The First Prime Suspect, they weren't thinking, I'm going to be on Masterpiece Theater, because they're making them for British television. But it was the first time an American television audience would see Helen Mirren or Kenneth Branagh, Judi Dench. It was the showcase and has been the showcase and continues to be the showcase for great British actors. And there, you know, every season when we air something new, suddenly, you know, a star is born. Michelle Dockery in Downton Abbey. Yes, Maggie Smith is there, who's been there forever, but Michelle Dockery, people didn't really know her, and she's gone on to have a movie career as well. Benedict Cumberbatch, another example. So I love it when we do a new series, as we are, for instance, this summer. We're going to be airing a brand new series of Poldark, which is a series we aired originally in the 70s. And it's Ross Poldark, who is our dashing hero in Cornwall, beautiful Cornwall, 1800, just the beginning of the 19th century. Aidan Turner is the young actor who plays the new Ross Poldark. And I promise you, this guy is going to have a movie offer the day after Poldark airs. So many of these young actors get noticed because they're in these shows.
So as you're promoting this book and talking in interviews about making Masterpiece, who do people ask about the most? I mean, Kenneth Branagh wrote the preface for your book. He makes a lot of comments in there. You talk about Alastair Cook. You talk about Benedict Cumberbatch. You talk about Maggie Smith. You know, who gets asked about the most?
Do you know, I think it's either Helen Mirren or Daniel Radcliffe. Little Daniel Radcliffe, who was in David Copperfield when he was 10 years old. That was his first television. And then, of course, he was noticed there and went on to be Harry Potter. People wanted to know what was he like then when he first appeared. Helen, what's Helen really like? Interestingly, we did a couple of American things over the years, and I have a couple of anecdotes in the book about Robert Redford. And in spite of all those British actors, a lot of people want to know what's Robert Redford really like.
Of course. Well, I'd have
he's
to say
very cool. That's what he's like.
I have to say Daniel Radcliffe was a very polite young man, because you have a picture of a thank you note that he wrote, and you say it's one of the few thank you notes from actors.
It's true. I think I've had maybe three over nearly 30 years of bringing the actors over here, and not that I expect them at all, but we bring them over here to do publicity for the American broadcast of their show and treat them quite well and spend a lot of time with them, and they work very hard for us giving interviews. Daniel came, he was maybe 11, came with his parents. They're great people. And went home, and in the mail came a note from Daniel in pencil. And you know, when kids are learning to write, often parents will take a ruler and draw the lines as if it's lined paper on an unlined card, so he would know how to kind of write straight. So I can see that somebody ruled in some lines for him, and then, thank you very much for the very nice time. Love, Daniel.
Well, a special keepsake. Great. Well, thanks for that little story and all the great stories in your book, and I appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you, Mark. Pleasure to talk to you.
Rebecca Eaton, executive producer of Masterpiece on PBS and also Masterpiece Mystery. You can learn more about the book at our website, wvxu.org, and she has stories about Maggie Smith and Diane Rigg and also the Daniel Radcliffe and so many other actors and actresses. It's a wonderful story to take in and enjoy. Making Masterpiece by Rebecca Eaton. This is The Book Club, 91.7. Anglophiles and fans rejoice. The new season of Downton Abbey hits the PBS airwaves tomorrow night, and the drama returns. Findlay Market, the historic Cincinnati institution, is celebrated in a new cookbook. Stories and recipes written by Bryn Muth and photographed by Julie Kramer revealed after a short break. And later, happy birthday, Mr. Tolkien. The Book Club at 91.7. I'm Mark Purcell. Stick around.